I will now pass it over to Jennifer Hanna, who will open today's call.
Thank you, Megan. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us all today. I am Jennifer Hanna, Director of ASPR's National Healthcare Preparedness Programs, or NHPP branch. And before I hand it over to our first presenter, I would like to provide a brief overview of what we will cover today. Next slide, please. First, I will provide a few updates on the ASPR Healthcare Readiness Program. Next, the NETEC, our National Emerging Special Pathogens Training and Education Center, will provide an update on the National Special Pathogen System, or NSPS, and their readiness posture for the current Ebola outbreak in Uganda. Afterwards, Dr. Meg Sullivan and Dr. Michael Anderson will provide an update on the current pediatric surge across the U.S. and open the call for a discussion regarding what you're seeing in your jurisdiction, what actions you and or your subrecipients have taken, gaps and challenges, and any resource needs. Finally, we will leave some time at the end of the call for general questions from the audience. Next slide, please. So as I stated, I'd like to begin today's webinar with two administrative updates. Next slide, please. As many of you know, in August of this year, ASPR issued a notice of funding opportunity to strengthen the regional tier of the National Special Pathogen System and increase the number of regional emerging special pathogen treatment centers, or RESPTCs. Applications came from a diverse audience of healthcare facilities from across the country and were reviewed by an objective review panel comprised of experts from professional associations, academia, and federal agencies. Informed by that review, ASPR selected three new RESPTCs, which include Washington Hospital Center in Washington, D.C., University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and Spectral Health System in Grand Rapids, Michigan. In addition to those three new RESPTCs, we also provided funding to the existing 10 regional emerging special pathogen treatment centers that are shown here on this slide. Next slide, please. I would like to take a moment and highlight recently published stories from the field in Texas, Rhode Island, and Arkansas. Stories from the field provide the opportunity to highlight the hard work and accomplishments of our recipients and subrecipients. These stories provide an example of the range of support that ASPR funding offers recipients and subrecipients to bolster healthcare readiness. To read these stories and others, head to the Stories from the Field page on asprhhs.gov, and for your reference, a member of our team will share the Stories from the Field page link in the chat. I will now pass it to NETEC to provide an update on the NSPS and their readiness posture for the current Ebola outbreak in Uganda. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Hi, everyone. My name is Vikram Mukherjee. I am an intensive care physician from Bellevue Hospital in New York and co-PI for NETEC. Thank you again for the opportunity to present at this platform. I'm joined here by NETEC colleagues, Shelley Schwedhelm, who will be talking about NSPS, and by Dr. Mehta, co-PI for NETEC, and Lauren Sauer, our director of research. And over the next few minutes, we'd like to give you a broad overview of the work that NETEC is doing in the world of special pathogens and the resources that we can offer in terms of strengthening preparedness for further outbreaks. So a partnership for preparedness, the National Emerging Special Pathogens Training and Education Center, NETEC, partners with the 13 emerging special pathogen treatment centers, the RESPECTs, with a very common goal of working together to increase the capability of US public health and healthcare systems to safely and effectively manage patients who are infected with special pathogens. Next, please. We have a very clear mission and a vision. The mission is to set the gold standard for special pathogen preparedness and respond across healthcare systems in the US with the goals of driving best practices, closing knowledge gaps, and developing innovative resources. Our vision is to highlight a sustainable infrastructure and a culture of readiness for managing suspected and confirmed special pathogen incidents across the US. And as you know, living through the 2.5 years of the pandemic, through the recent monkeypox outbreak, and as we look carefully at the ongoing Sudan Ebola virus, this is a very topical and necessary mission and vision that NITEC offers for US healthcare systems. Next, please. We have three or four major tools that we have to offer. The big categories are consultation assessments, education and training, support for researchers, and recently we've been growing an arm called the International Arm, where we are building bridges with our colleagues in Europe and Africa and Southeast Asia so that we can learn from each other's lessons and have a more unified approach to special pathogen outbreaks. Next, please. Reviewing consultation assessment first, we have a large team of subject matter experts that provide consultations and assessments with the goal of assessing and advancing special pathogens readiness with free expert consulting. Next, please. What we offer? We help healthcare facilities and EMS agencies prepare for special pathogen events with free virtual and on-site readiness consulting and program assessments. Next, please. And we have two major categories. One is a targeted support service. Essentially, we offer virtual or on-site readiness consultations to help healthcare facilities prepare for special pathogen events. If you or an acquaintance works in a healthcare facility and wants to have its biopreparedness looked at, feel free to give us a call and we will engage with you to make sure you get the support and the services you need. Our TSS services, the targeted support services, are delivered by experts who have real-world experience in special pathogen events and are built from a big bench of hospitals, EMS agencies, long-term care centers, researchers, and government agencies across the years. Many of us have been working in this field for decades and can bring the expertise and the experience to your facility. The other big category that we offer are assessments. NITEC's online self-assessment tools help healthcare facilities and EMS services evaluate their operational readiness to respond to special pathogen events. And these self-assessments enable you to recognize strengths, identify opportunities for improvement. Next, please. The different forms of self-assessment depends on which category of readiness you would want your institution to perform at. The 13 respects, we have an operational readiness scorecard. This has been developed, of course, in close symbiotic collaboration with the respects, and it's essentially a decision-making tool to assess on a monthly basis how ready a respect is to activate their biocontainment units, looking at staff, stuff, space, and so on to be able to decide that. The score, as we mentioned, is administered on a monthly basis, verified on a weekly basis, and is sometimes used to inform our federal partners on operational challenges identified across the network. The second big category is for the state-designated special pathogen treatment centers. NITEC and ASPR have developed a survey tool, which is currently in a phase of deployment, and this will help in identifying gaps in readiness that can that once identified, NITEC can help through our targeted support services to follow up consultations and have a team go to your facility to help where the needs are. Next, please. The third big category is SPORSA. That's an acronym for Special Pathogens Operational Readiness Self-Assessment. Essentially, what we do is once a year, across the 13 respects, we have this SPORSA deployed so that the respects can self-identify any vulnerabilities they might have. And this usually follows up with the NITEC on-site assessment to look at preparedness in a very non-punitive way and learn from best practices that the respects have developed in their own regions. Going along the same trend, another resource of assessing is your frontline checklist or healthcare facility special pathogen checklist, which goes back to the basics. If you're an ED in a frontline hospital, are you prepared to easily identify, isolate, and inform a patient who might come in with high-risk exposure and concerning symptoms? Again, this is much shorter, very usable within a few minutes of getting acquainted to it. And this checklist guides facilities through a review of their immediate care capabilities, you know, the bare minimum that if a person comes in with high-risk exposure with concerning symptoms, are you able to timely isolate, inform, and identify those patients. Thank you. Next, please. All these resources are available on the NEATTECH.org website. And just to review how successful the uptake has been, we've had over the last year or more than 400 answered requests for technical assistance. We have assessed 42 healthcare facilities for readiness, and we have a large bench of at least 70 experts in special pathogens who can provide either virtual or on-site customized answers to the questions that each facility might have. Next, please. The second big category of resources that NEATTECH offers is education and training. This is inherent, the National Emerging Special Pathogens Training and Education Center. This is inherent to our existence. And the goal, again, is very clear, is to prepare healthcare workers for special pathogen events so that they can safely take care of patients coming into their doors. And we do this through specialized education, through training, and through online resources. Next, please. What we offer courses and training for nurses, physicians, EMS colleagues, other healthcare professionals, including the lab. Our resources equip facilities and individuals with preparedness best practices. On the right here, you see a picture of Angie Vasha, one of our core subject matter experts, providing in-person education before pandemic times, therefore the absence of masks, before pandemic times, so that they can enhance preparedness across the realm. Next, please. Over the last 2.5 years, we have complemented our in-person education with a very flexible online module. Over the last, since early 2020, we've delivered education through webinars, podcasts, online courses. And these are, of course, free and self-paced. Many of them can offer CMEs as well. Along with this, almost all our resources are recorded so that you can look at them offline. And not only on YouTube, but also on the NEATTECH.org website, we have a resource library that can provide education towards customizable exercises based on the Etsy model, resources, tools, and so on. Next, please. And lastly, again, we have been very busy. Over the last year, we've had around 750 online course enrollments, around close to 1,000 library downloads, close to 500 webinar participants. In fact, a recent town hall addressing challenges and improving guidance on the Sudan Ebola virus had more than 3,000 registrants, close to 2,200 participants, giving an idea of how far-reaching NEATTECH's prowess is in education and training in the world of special pathogens. Next, please. The last big arm that NEATTECH works in is the Special Pathogens Research Network. The goal, again, is very simple, creating a very rapid warm-based infrastructure to improve readiness for conducting rapid clinical research related to special pathogens in the United States. Next, please. What we offer, the Special Pathogens Research Network, or the SPRN, provides researchers with training, tools, and resources to quickly understand clinical syndromes and study effective treatments and clinical management strategies. This can be very imperative when you have a novel pathogen affecting US soil in terms of the need for vaccines, the need for effective countermeasures, the rapid need for having on-site EINDs and so on. And SPRN has been doing this over the last few years in being able to enhance healthcare facility readiness for carrying out clinical trials in this realm. Next, please. The four big categories here is that we can offer a central IRB. The SPRN Central IRB, based out of Nebraska, ensures that clinical trials across all the respects are reviewed and implemented so that they can be deployed quickly during a special pathogen event. This came to highlight in the early days of the pandemic when remdesivir, the first FDA-approved countermeasure for SARS-CoV-2, and around 30% of global recruits to the remdesivir trials were through the NEATTECH Central IRB, through the SPRN network, with a mean onset of activation around 1.5 days between when the study was introduced and when it went live at all these centers. The second big support for researchers is in training, where NEATTECH helps train partner institutions to develop capacity and turn on protocols. The third big category is biorepository access. The biorepository provides comprehensive library of biospecimen paired with rich clinical metadata. We have collaborations with BSL4 labs to be able to do this. And lastly, State of the Science Suite. The SPRN compiles and disseminates cutting-edge research in combating emerging pathogens. We've had multiple publications come out of the SPRN group, which not only reviews emerging pathogens, but also helps in informing preparedness, in informing staffing solutions, and so on in the world of special pathogens. Next, please. Again, very productive. We have more than 200 specimens available in the biorepository for researchers to access. The special supplement of Journal of Health Security, which Lauren Sauer co-edited, had more than 2,000 page views and was a good, nice conglomeration of NETEC experts putting in their academic publications here. And we've had multiple new training resources to increase capacity to turn on protocols. Next, please. Lastly, over the last month and a half, you've had a very active role to play in the Sudan Ebola virus disease response. The BioFire Warrior Panel initiation, the SPRN is proactively supporting all 10 to 13 respects and the NIH to onboard local testing capacity. Lauren's team is working hard on the countermeasure MBP-134 to make sure that if a patient does come to the US soil, we are able to provide countermeasures in a timely and appropriate manner. And lastly, clinical research response. SPRN will work with subject matter experts to provide input on clinical case definitions, on guidance, working very closely with the CDC and other ASPR colleagues to be able to do this in a timely manner. Next, please. Moving on, I'm going to hand it over to Shelley, one of our core leaders for NETEC, to go over the NSPS. Thank you, and we'll answer questions at the back end. Shelley.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Mukherjee. So today I'm going to just share a little bit of information, early still, work in progress on our National Special Pathogen System of Care. So when we think about systems of care nationally, you might come to mind with trauma, stroke, and this is in an effort to really create a similar strategy across the nation for special pathogens. So next slide, please. This is our mission and vision. Our mission is to provide a coordinated and standardized healthcare network of highly quality, patient and community-centered care for patients with suspected or infected with a special pathogen in the U.S. while protecting our healthcare workforce. I think COVID has taught us a lot, and we certainly understand that the next special pathogen is not far behind. And as you just heard Dr. Mukherjee talk about Ebola, work is underway to be prepared for that as well. So when we think about a vision for a national special pathogen system of care, our aspirational goal is to save lives through a sustained, standardized special pathogen system of care that really does enable our healthcare personnel and administrators to provide agile and high quality care across a whole continuum. Next slide. So again, aspirational, as we were putting together the system of care, we said, well, what would this look like if we, you know, if we're successful, what would be those outcomes that we would be striving for? So zero preventable deaths after special pathogen infections. We know very well that we've become very good at, you know, providing the higher level of care and quality of care that's needed to really save lives when it goes to special pathogen care. 2 hours to mobilize a network after a suspected patient may show up, and then 100% of the U.S. population having access. We certainly know that equity was a major challenge in both the recent COVID-19 outbreak as well as the monkeypox as well. So our goal is to really work hard to mitigate some of those access to care and equity issues. Next slide. So I want to spend just a couple minutes talking about why now. So this has been needed for a long time, and we certainly had part of a structure back in 2015 after care of patients with Ebola virus disease in 2014-15. But why now would we want to invest in this national preparedness effort? We came up with about four major key points that we wanted to share. One would be to reduce the cost of future outbreaks. So when we think about this, you know, obviously the whole goal is to reduce harm, but in disaster preparedness, it's one of those things you either have it or you don't when the time comes. So obviously doing what we can do to mitigate and prepare for future outbreaks is key. Secondly, capitalizing on renewed global interest in preparedness. There's lots of leaders across various industries kind of working and should be collaborating to reduce disruption in the economy, businesses, and unfortunately, our memory has been short in regards to this over time. So the goal of the NSPS is to really create a long, self-sustaining special pathogen system of care. Thirdly, applying lessons learned from COVID. We always want to look back, and obviously we're still in the very midst of COVID as we speak. We know, and as I mentioned, the disproportionate equity impacts of COVID, but we also know that there are issues with supply chain, coordination, communication, load balancing, and key features in regards to preparedness and success in being able to get people to the right care at the right time. And then finally, enhancing the overall preparedness ecosystem. There are lots of opportunities to have synergistic relationships with many of the national efforts in other programs, whether those are CDC programs, ASPR programs, regional disaster grant comes to mind, and making sure that we're doing what we can to optimize and amplify each other's work as it, in regards to this. Next slide. And then I won't spend too much time here, but I just want to talk briefly about where we've been and where we're headed. So back in December 2020, there were some funding provided to NETAC, which Vikram just nicely overlaid the programs from within NETAC. We started with an opportunity to work with lots of different stakeholders and did some significant interviews, some research, and a needs assessment. We held some immersive workshops to just better understand what could this system of care look like. And then we went about trying to design. We established some working groups and held sessions with experts to really provide input about how a structure like this might be organized. And then finally, we launched some of the strategy to start working on the different components. And I'll start to lay some of those out for you and talk about next steps here briefly. Next slide. And finally, this is just a pictorial. So there is a core advisory group that sort of will oversee this structure. On the left, you see a coordinating body for the National Special Pathogen System of Care. That's sort of what I call the engine, the operations. All the work that NETAC's doing certainly fits into that from a standpoint of education, training, research infrastructure, technical assistance, et cetera. And then we also need to go about really working hard on public-private partnerships and some funding opportunities to be able to create this national infrastructure. And then on the right side of the screen, you see there the delivery network with the tiered system. And this may prompt a reminder from back when in 2015, as we had assessment hospitals, frontline hospitals, and then state designated treatment centers, as well as regional special pathogen treatment centers. So tier A is those now 13 that Jennifer Hanna spoke about early on. And then tier B and tier C and tier D would be also built out so we could have robust diagnostic support, surge support for special pathogen patients, et cetera. So next slide. We wanted to really begin to focus in on a couple of major priorities for right now. So we did a lot of work, as I mentioned, to get our stakeholders to the table to better understand the needs of the country, to talk to lots of different leaders in industry and public-private partnerships. And now we're starting to begin to try to lay out the priorities and next steps. So we believe that we need to build out a foundation of a 501c3 to really take advantage of perhaps some additional funding outside of our federal support that we receive, which is key to the success of this tiered structure. And we'll need to get a board of directors put in place. Then in addition, we're going to start working on the care delivery network. Of course, you know, a lot of that is started at least in the tier A facilities, but there's a lot of work to be done as we build out tier B, tier C, and tier D, which would be the frontline hospitals. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Megan.
Thank you, Shelley, and thank you, Dr. Mukherjee, for presenting today. We'll now go to the Q&A portion of this presentation. So just as a reminder, if you have any questions, feel free to come off mute and ask your question or put those in the chat. And it looks like we have a question that just came in asking, can you discuss the public-private partnerships a bit more?
Yeah, our intent would be to really see if there are industry leaders and other potential philanthropy who may be interested in helping to support the tiered structure and the National Special Pathogen System of Care. So while not having complete dependency on the federal government to build this out, but also making way and putting the infrastructure in place to be able to support this moving forward and provide the resources that are needed to make it a robust system.
And it looks like a follow-up question to that, asking about state government in particular.
Yeah, I think, you know, both federal and state would be certainly key players, partners with any initiative like this. But our whole goal was to try to diversify a bit when it came to funding to be able to seek additional resources to build out the structure.
Thank you, Shelley. We'll see if there's any other questions that come in the chat. Just wait a minute.
And Megan, if we could just go back to that previous slide, because I think that it's really important for folks to be able to see the vast variety and the breadth and depth of resources and information that NETEC has available. I know that folks might be taking pictures or copying many of this down, much of this information down. Also, want to kind of foot stomp the information that Dr. Mukherjee shared as well about the offer of the assessments and specifically regarding the technical assistance. We know that this is really a very busy time. We know that folks are busy with ongoing COVID. Pediatric surge, which we'll hear a little bit more about shortly, and then of course very busy with Ebola planning. So want to make sure that that folks do have the opportunity to reach out to NETEC for any assistance.
Yeah, thanks for that, Jennifer. And just go to NETEC.org and you'll see, a quick click there to ask a question. And we'll engage a few of our subject matter experts to get back to you quickly. And then that's just sort of the best place to go to get access to all of the ways to reach us and hear and see some of our varied resources. So we have lots of nice exhibits on the website, like for Ebola. It's got the frontline checklist, quick downloads, some laboratory resources, lots of different things. So thank you for calling that out.
Great. Well, in the interest of time, I think we're going to go ahead and move to the next presentation. And we will be sharing this slide as well as the others in the follow-up email for those of you who hadn't had a chance to copy down that information. So Jennifer, I'll turn it over to you to introduce our presenters.
Great, thanks, Megan. Certainly, I'm excited to introduce our next presenters, Dr. Meg Sullivan, who serves as the Chief Medical Officer here at ASPR, and Dr. Michael Anderson, who serves as a Senior Advisor at ASPR. Dr. Sullivan and Dr. Anderson will be providing an update on the current pediatric surge situation around the U.S. So I will hand it over to them to introduce themselves and to discuss the current pediatric surge.
Great, thank you so much, Jennifer, and good afternoon, everyone. I am also excited to be here today, and I know I can speak for Dr. Anderson as well. We just wanted to spend a few minutes kind of briefly providing an update on ASPR's activities and assets related to this issue, and then more importantly, hopefully hear from you about what you're seeing on the ground, strategies that are working, and opportunities for additional collaboration and support. So at ASPR, just as I know all of you are, we are working incredibly hard with our state and local partners on managing this surge of respiratory illnesses. It is an attempt to help mitigate the hospital capacity issues, as well as capacity issues across our entire healthcare system that we know is bleeding into urgent cares, primary cares, and throughout the entire system. We are monitoring capacity across the country. We are sharing best practices to reduce the strain on systems and standing by to deploy additional personnel and supplies as needed. So just to talk a little bit more briefly about each of those, in terms of hospital capacity, as soon as we started seeing the increase of respiratory illnesses in several regions of the country, ASPR immediately reached out to our partners on the ground to better understand what they were seeing. And through this outreach and in collaboration with our CDC partners, we are tracking trends in the number of cases of respiratory viruses, number of emergency department visits, the number of inpatient admissions, and the number of intensive care unit admissions to allow us to better anticipate surge peaks and valleys in hospital bed capacity. We know first that the data that we receive is incomplete and are working to try and get it in different ways, whether it is, again, in coordination with our CDC partners and through HHS Protect, but also through on-the-ground assessments from our ASPR regional emergency staff, and really appreciate the collaboration that we've had from our partners on the ground to be able to identify hotspots, whether it's through one of those two areas, and to be able to better focus our resources there. We are also working closely with the FDA to monitor the supply chain for any potential shortages. We know that there already are some either true shortages or resource constraints, and are doing everything we can, again, in partnership with the FDA to minimize the impact on the ground. So all of this work helps us identify and work closely with those health systems that are or will experience stress and strain as a result of RSV, flu, and COVID in the context of the other burdens that we know exist right now. We've also begun convening town halls across our 10 regions, bringing together pediatric experts, children hospital leaders, local and state emergency managers, public health leaders, as well as other key local, state, and federal partners to hear directly from our partners on the ground and capture and share best practices. Over the last couple of weeks, we have held town halls in regions 1, 3, 9, and 10, and have upcoming town halls throughout over the next few weeks to capture all of the regions. During these town halls and in other venues, we are sharing technical expertise, resources, and clinical tools from many ASPR-funded preparedness programs, including some that we have on the call today, including Pediatric Disaster Care Centers of Excellence, Regional Disaster Health Response Systems, our ASPR Tracy Information Portal, and the Hospital Preparedness Program. And we are looking forward to hearing more from many of you today about some of the work that you are doing. And finally, from response, at ASPR, we also have additional tools such as personnel and supplies that we are readying for deployment should they be needed. We know that this next level of surge response assistance may be available in some circumstances when the demand on a jurisdiction exceeds its capabilities and available resources. In addition to personnel, we also manage supplies that may be used as part of a response through a strategic national stockpile. This includes medical supplies such as PPE for healthcare workers, ventilators, and some COVID, flu, and RSV tests, and that continue to be available upon state request and adjudication. And finally, in closing, before kind of opening it up for discussion, you know, I just want to say that we know that with the increased RSV infections, a rising number of flu cases, the ongoing burden of COVID-19 in our communities, in the face of an ongoing youth mental health crisis, ongoing staffing shortages throughout our entire healthcare system, it is an incredibly challenging time, and there's no doubt that we will face additional challenges this winter. And so ASPR, CDC, HRSA, OASH, all of our federal partners are working closely with states to ensure they have the resources they need to keep our communities and our country safe throughout the winter, or healthy throughout the winter. And I just do want to take a moment as well to highlight the work of states and healthcare providers across the country who are truly using innovative strategies to support their health systems. Over the last few weeks, what we have heard around this innovation and collaboration has truly been heartwarming, even as we know that ongoing challenges exist. So hopefully, again, that was just a brief overview of some of the work that we are doing. This remains an incredible top priority, and we will continue to engage in whatever way possible, but would love to take a little bit of time right now and to hear from some individuals on this webinar. As I said, again, some of the work that you are doing, any specifics about what you're seeing on the ground or any opportunities for further collaboration and support.
And Meg, while folks may be queuing up their comments, I think we received a few questions. If you would indulge us to respond to those questions, if you can, you and Dr. Anderson. And the first question was, is that, can you be more specific on what supply shortages you are aware of?
Yeah, you know, I think, again, this is in close collaboration with the FDA. So there have been two shortages that the FDA specifically kind of referenced on their website. The first is a specific formulation of albuterol, the solution used for nebulizers. This is the 20 milliliter vials as opposed to the smaller vials. They're working very closely to kind of increase production. And because of the other vials and sizes, they haven't seen a true impact yet, but know that this is something they're seeing on the ground. The other is amoxicillin, the oral suspension. Again, some shortages with that specific formulation and are working hard to try and mitigate that. We are also knowing or hearing about some supply constraints, which are more on the supply side. So whether it's nasal cannulas or pediatric tubing, again, we're working really hard across industry and manufacturers to try and mitigate that. But this is, as with our engagement with our local on the ground partners, as we hear more, our supply chain control tower and the FDA going to dive in deep to see how what we can do to minimize the impact on the ground.
Great. Thank you, Meg. We got a couple of questions regarding personnel and staff resources. The first question is around, can you identify what type of personnel? And I think that's probably in reference to the type of personnel that's being considered for that may be able to provide support.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a great question. And again, we know that there are challenges with so many challenges across the healthcare system with staffing. And I think one of the first things we are doing, you know, is kind of that middle category that I talked about, is really trying to work with our regions to create that regional cooperation, you know, the medical operation coordination cells, bed sharing, load balancing, to really try and mitigate some of those, the real impacts that we're seeing. Again, for additional tools when those are needed or requested, we do have our National Disaster Medical System teams or other staffing surge tools through contracting support that we could use to decompress their hospitals. This again is based on in collaboration with a state request, in which case then we have a defined process by which we adjudicate it and provide it when it's available. What we've been, you know, we've heard questions from kind of on the ground hospitals or healthcare providers to better understand, if they feel they have resource needs, really encourage them to work directly with their states who work with our ASPR regional emergency coordinators who can help manage those conversations, provide more details, and then work through some of those questions.
And are there specific triggers that are for states to request assistance? I mean, I know that you've already stated previously, of course, to be working closely with their regional emergency coordinators.
Yeah, I really think that's the best here. I think, you know, we've worked through these processes under different systems and have, again, a defined process that we use, but I would just encourage states to work with their regional emergency coordinators.
Great. And I know that we got a question here about resources available for states. And I know one of the resources that was highlighted at the top of this particular discussion was the ASPR Tracy Pediatric Resources page, which was highlighted for everyone's reference as well in the ASPR Healthcare Readiness Bulletin that went out this week. Are there any additional resources that you would like to highlight, Meg?
I might turn to Dr. Anderson and have him jump in here.
Yeah, I think the ASPR-TRACI is a great collection of most of our resources. Meg highlighted the three ASPR and two HRSA funded disaster centers for kids. They've got a lot of tools and resources. And I think the other thing, I'll just take the next question, which is coming down the pike, and that's innovative strategies that we're getting from the town halls. And I think one of the most interesting ones is just trying to figure out where a PICU bed is for community hospitals. And we've seen resources in a couple of different regions, even some aeromedical flight systems that are doing this, where they've got green, yellow, red, what's the number and how many beds do they potentially have? So, it's just heartbreaking. You hear about a community hospital that either a doc or a nurse or a ward clerk spends 6 hours just trying to find a bed. So this way to bring data and to bring known beds together, I think is really terrific. So that's sort of answering the next question as well.
As you can see, there's kind of a tactical question here as well, talking about, are there options for locating cribs and pumps? Don Lewis noted that there's a shortage, and Diane Anderson also highlighted that they're beginning to see a shortage of cribs and warmers.
Yeah, I will just mention again, supply chain, right, is high on our priorities and something we continue to monitor. Again, would suggest that healthcare facilities that are seeing those shortages, again, work through their regional and state staff. There's many different kind of options or resources or ways that we can try and provide support depending on what the specific question or need is. So I would always start there.
Great, thank you. And I know that that Dr. Sullivan and Dr. Anderson would really like to hear from folks on the call as well, to hear what you're seeing and hearing on the ground. I know we've heard some of this already that's been entered into the chat, but also what actions are being taken on the ground. I mean, especially I know with our hospital associations, this is an opportunity for you to share some of that information as well. And I did see just a comment in the chat about Puerto Rico is seeing an increase of pediatric bed occupancies, but are manageable at this moment. So that's some kind of sort of good news. And just a reminder, if you want to share anything, please feel free to enter information into the chat, or you can raise your hand and we'll unmute you. The state of Nebraska has started a MEOC for situational awareness with our healthcare coalition. And Megan, I see Teresa Innert has her hand up. So if you could unmute her, or if she can unmute herself to ask her question live or provide comments live.
Thanks, Jennifer. Just a quick question about trying to get ground truth and situational awareness. Here in Arizona, obviously, they're seeing RSV case counts 10 times higher than the average, where we would typically see in October, like 56 cases. Last week, we had 581. So we're definitely feeling the pressure and stress trying to get through EM resource, trying to get situational awareness on pediatric vents, supplies. The trach supplies we know are in short supply everywhere. But I just have a question about the benefit of asking, having the federal government ask for an official RFI from states with regard to pediatric capacity and capability. Load balancing isn't as easy is because the beds aren't as plentiful as they were, for adults. And there doesn't seem to be as much importance about in providing the data. But when the federal government asks the state and the state asks the stakeholders, there's a high level of response, if you will. And so I just wanted just to ask, what you think the benefit would be or not if ASPR were to do an official RFI to the states with regard to PEDS capacity and capability. Thanks.
Yeah, no, thank you for that question. And I think, you know, as I think I mentioned early in the remarks, well, and we know in with everything public health, healthcare, right, data is so important, and having accurate data, right, can really influence where kind of efforts should be directed the most. And I think, as I said, we're working really closely with CDC, with our on the ground partners to try and get as much information as possible. But I also know that we are mindful of A, what is possible, and B, not to want to burden kind of an already overstressed system. So I think trying to balance both of those. I do think it's a really, though, kind of interesting and helpful question, and one that is definitely worth us taking back and kind of talking through.
Megan, Mike, it looks like we've got some folks that have been entering some activities here. So Georgia is hosting a statewide call tomorrow with hospital CMOs and officials with the state Department of Public Health Emergency Preparedness Division. And so they'll know more about their status after that call. The state of Colorado has activated the combined hospital transfer center to assist with PEDS capacity issues. And I know that Lyle Moore has presented on that combined hospital transfer center previously, that it was, very helpful during COVID. So happy to see that that's being able to employ that as well. The state of Michigan has a pediatric dashboard on Jivari platform to provide situational awareness related to bed availability. And just some ground truth here, Georgia has high rates of pediatric bed occupancy, critical care bed shortages, and high volumes in EDs. RSV has been replaced by influenza. I highly recommend that flu vaccination be emphasized, using every healthcare opportunity to optimize vaccination for influenza. Minnesota has started daily PEDS coordination calls and has met with our medical surgeon. The Children's Hospital here is doing a good job of setting up a fast track, ready track to help steer kids from ED. And they've steered 184 children from the ED this weekend. Says that we need help with staffing. And Idaho has started weekly PEDS mock calls. Here we have staffing now as an issue and expanding beyond the con. Is there any conversation around a national state of emergency to provide some leeway under an 1135 waiver? So I'll pause there since that is a question.
I think we all know this is, first, just the healthcare workforce in general, there are so many challenges. And then with all of the increased strain through, right, RSV, COVID, flu, and everything else that is happening. I can say that, again, this continues to be a top priority, not just for ASPR, but across the entire U.S. government. And there are a lot of conversations that are happening. I can't speak specifically to this one, but I do know that there's a lot of, again, this continues to be a priority and looking for opportunities to support.
We're still seeing a lot of information that's coming in. It says in New Jersey, we have daily calls and data collection with the healthcare coalitions. Daily reports to Department of Health and back to the healthcare coalitions, identifying challenges and possible solutions, opportunities to support each other. We have clinical leaders providing their expertise, all entities, public health, EMS, OEM, engaged in receiving the same information and supporting difficult pediatric transfers. Meetings with clinical leadership and CEOs regularly, including Department of Health and healthcare coalition members. Washington State says that they have activated the Healthcare Multi-Agency Coordination Group, or MACG, for the pediatric surge. The Washington Medical Coordination Center is pivoting for pediatric patient transfers across the state. Missouri has implemented pediatric bed queries through EM Resource, weekly coordination meetings at both the state and HHS regional level, and training for community hospitals through EMSC to encourage treatment at non-pediatric hospitals. New Mexico has noted that they have placed pediatric bed polling on EM Resource. I don't know why I keep saying EMS Resource when it's definitely EM Resource. twice daily, and we are having a statewide coalition call tomorrow with the Assistant Medical Chief of Staff at UNM Pediatrics. So lots of good information about what's going on the ground and those actions. And just, you know, just want to thank all of our HPP recipients for encouraging also your healthcare coalition for completing the short questionnaire that that ASPR sent out to all of the healthcare coalitions. And we'll be pulling that information down and sharing those survey results with everyone, as well as with Dr. Sullivan and Dr. Anderson as well. And we got another comment is from Colorado's perspective, cannot emphasize enough the importance of the regional disaster health response systems engagement for multi-state coordination. And Illinois continues to closely monitor PICU and pediatric bed availability, and will be stratifying the daily ED border questions by age. And we'll make sure that we capture all of the information in the chat and share that with Dr. Sullivan and Dr. Anderson as well.
Yeah, thanks. I think I was just about to write a note to say that this is really heartening to see. Again, you know, I think one of the things that we've also been saying is, you know, there are real challenges that are happening right now, just, you know, really, really high rates of RSV, particularly in October, coupled with rising cases of flu, ongoing burden of COVID, and right in the midst of already a strained system. But we also know that there are, so kind of immediately, right, what are things that can be done? And we're just seeing a list after list of these, which is wonderful. Again, I think as part of our ASPR funded programs, to see this work being done on the ground is really, really heartening, and definitely something we want to capture. We also know that a lot of these are long-term challenges that we need to address as a long-term way. And I think that is also part of ASPR's mission with our healthcare readiness portfolio and the funding that we do and our partnership with all of you. And so we're also trying to think through, right, what are those things, regional bed coordination, you know, improved data, some of the themes that we've heard here, how do we truly make an impact so that, you know, as knowing respiratory season unfortunately comes every year, that we don't see what we're seeing this time over and over again.
And the only thing I'll add in closing is I believe we had a slide on the town halls we've already done in the town halls that are coming up. So once again, as Meg pointed out, we'll be doing all of the regions and then assessing if we're going to do round two or what's next. But really do appreciate everybody that's been on these calls.
Great. Thank you both. And I know that folks are still entering information into the chat, and we'll make sure that we capture that, as I said, and we'll share that information with Dr. Sullivan and Dr. Anderson as well, because we know that they definitely have their finger on the pulse of this this current surge event. So I think now we're going to transition to some of our general Q&A that you may have. These are questions that you can ask for ASPR in general, or you can certainly ask questions for our presenters as well. And I know that there was a question here. There's a couple of questions here. One is, should we expect the questionnaire, and I think we're referring to the Healthcare Coalition questionnaire, to be a regularly occurring request? Right now, it's a one-time request, and then we'll determine if we're going to ask the or gather information again, but really appreciate everyone, healthcare coalitions that have responded. Please continue to encourage your healthcare coalitions to share that information, because it really is important and an important input to ASPR, and also will help with some decision making. And this is a question for Dr. Sullivan and Dr. Anderson, was that have these town hall invitations already been sent out?
Yep, so the town hall invitation for Region 6, which is tomorrow, has been sent out. And anybody who would like to receive that can send, I think, an email. I'm happy to put my email in the chat, or Jennifer can reach out, and we'll make sure to get an invite. The remaining town hall invites go out usually about 2 or 3 days before the actual date.
Thank you. And you can certainly send any of those requests either directly to me, as hopefully everyone has my email address, jennifer.hanna@hhs.gov, or of course you can send an email to the HPP resource mailbox, which is hpp@hhs.gov, and we'll make sure that that information gets triaged and directed to the appropriate people, and that you are on that list for the town hall. And we have, as Region 5 is still waiting to hear, and we heard November 15th, but sooner the better. And Megan, could we just show that slide again that has the dates for the town hall? Great. So we have Region 5 and Region 7 will be a joint pediatric town hall, and it is scheduled for the 15th. And I know that there was an earlier question at kind of the top of the meeting about what is the expectation of the state to work with the RESPTC, since RESPTCs are now getting the funding directly and states are getting aren't getting any for this work. And then I think that there was a subsequent comment also about being acknowledged that states are no longer receiving funding for this project. I think that was referencing some of the NETEC information. And you mean, as many as you know, the Ebola funding did expire at the end of FY 2019, which was September 30, 2020. And we know that, that it's certainly been challenging to maintain capability and capacity in the absence of funding. Keeping in mind that, of course, we did provide, some additional funding for COVID, but that was for COVID. So when we're talking about that capability and capacity for Ebola, in some instances, some of our states and jurisdictions have been able to maintain that capability and capacity there with assessment hospitals and so on and so forth. But what we've asked and directed our RESPTCs to do as well, which was included within their notice of funding opportunity, was to make sure that they had the states at the table. What we understand is that, just like right now with Ebola planning or any other type of infectious disease planning or response, is that that response is not going to happen in a vacuum. There's certainly a public health function, and there's also that healthcare function. And at the end of the day, certainly it's about making sure that we are saving lives and also improving patient outcomes. And so I would ask that at the state to continue to be at the table when those RESPTCs reach out to you. We know that a lot of work started back in 2015 with the original Ebola funding, and that in many cases there are those operations plans and those CONOPs that are in place. So the good news is that no one is starting from scratch, but just that encourage you to continue to work with those RESPTCs. And I think there may be another couple of questions at the bottom. Hang on here. Okay, so let's see. On the September 14th recipient call, it was noted that a final version of the BP4 HPP requirements with updated due dates would be released in the coming weeks. Is there any update on when this documentation will be released? We are finalizing the review, and I know that it's taken us quite a while to get that done, but we will finish those BP4 HPP requirements and get those released and posted on the website. And then this final question here is for Dr. Sullivan and Dr. Anderson, who is recommended to be invited to the pediatric town hall.
And Jennifer, I think Dr. Sullivan and Dr. Anderson had to drop, but
we had to drop. Yeah. You know, you certainly want your I mean, it's really open to hospitals, healthcare facilities, your clinicians, and it's really open to anyone that wants to participate on those calls. We think that this pediatric surge is certainly a shared event. So if once you receive that invite, please share it widely. And I know that we're pretty much at the top of the hour. Let's see, we have a question here. It says I mentioned this briefly, but are there any updates or additional information for future funding for state assessment and treatment hospitals? And unfortunately, there is no additional funding at this time for those assessment hospitals or those special pathogen treatment centers. But we're certainly trying to explore options, you know, in the absence of having any emergency supplemental funding. But I think that's probably a little ways off for us to kind of noodle all of that and figure out a best path for it. But we do understand that there is a critical need for funding in order to maintain and in some instances restore that capability and that capacity that we built back in 2015. So really appreciate that question. And that's certainly at the forefront of our minds. And as I said, I know we're a little over time here, so I'm going to go ahead and close out this particular meeting. So if we could go ahead and go to the next slide, Megan and Elizabeth, great. So of course, just want to thank all of our presenters for their time today. And of course, to thank all of you for your active participation in today's meeting. You know, as stated, you know, anything that you entered into the chat will certainly, I'll be sharing that with our ASPR leaders that were on this call. As a reminder, we invite you to share any stories regarding how you or your members, hospitals, and other subrecipients are using ASPR funding to make a positive impact on their communities. And if you have a story to share, please fill out our stories from the field submission form or reach out to your field project officer for more information. And a member of our team will drop the story from the field submission form link in the chat for easy reference. And we look forward to hearing about all the great work that you are doing. So with that, we're going to certainly end today's call. We know we went a little over time, so just want to thank everybody for hanging in there with us and want to wish everyone a really good day and a great afternoon. So thanks, everyone.